Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where in the world you are, and welcome to Interop Radio for Tuesday, January 27th, 2015. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, and we have a truly outstanding episode lined up for you today. We're going to be talking with Tania Hurst, who I met at CES, and she's a fascinating woman who is active in the maker community. We're going to be talking about making and the way that women and girls are using the maker community as a path into IT, into management, and into all sorts of great things. Now, before I start talking with Tania, I want to remind everyone that this is Interop Radio, which means it is the radio component of the Interop community, Interop Las Vegas, connecting the IT community, happening in the real world space, April 27th through May 1st, 2015, at the Mandalay Bay Convention Center in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. For more information and to register, go to www.interop.com. Well, Tania, I'm pleased to welcome you to Interop Radio. It's kind of funny because normally I live on the East Coast, you live on the West Coast, but today I'm in a studio in San Francisco and you're down in Florida where I'm from. So we're just flipping all kinds of things around today, aren't we?
We certainly are, and I actually have never been to Florida, so I'm thrilled that this is my first visit.
Well, we are, even though I'm not there, I'll welcome you to Florida and say I hope it's not your last visit. We love to have creative, interesting people join us in the Sunshine State.
Oh, well, I've heard there's a maker fair that happens down here, so I'm sure I'll be back for that.
Oh, outstanding, outstanding. I look forward to seeing you there. Well, while we are thinking about all that, I'd love to hear a little bit about the whole idea of how you got into the maker community. Now, you didn't come to this community out of an electrical engineering program, or do I have something wrong there?
Well, actually, the closest connection I have to electrical engineering in my past really is my family. My grandpa was a Tau Beta Pi Eta Kappa Nu electrical engineer and worked for Illinois Bell for 40 years. He was, you know, one of those original, great guys that did that. And he's inspired me a lot, but actually he passed away in January of 2013. And then in March of 2013, I found out what an Arduino was. I had never even heard of that thing before, and, you know, I was, you know, amazed, and of course it didn't come out of just, you know, thin air. I was working at the Tech Museum of Innovation in San Jose, where I taught electrical engineering. Honestly, we had three labs about electricity, but I was hired initially because I have a degree in geology. So the museum wanted me to teach that lab, and then one special day we had an event called Open Make. And, one of the departments there said, Tania, you should be a part of this. And so one of the exhibit designers named Romy Littrell had a wearable tech coat that had conductive fabric on the sleeves. And using an Arduino in the pocket, we could complete a circuit to make the coat sing. I mean, not really sing, but, you know, make noise on a piezo. And so I was just blown away right away of, wow, you know, accessible electrical engineering paired with computer code and wearable technology. So it just floored me right away, and I've been a maker ever since.
Well, I'm fascinated by a couple of the aspects of what you said, because you mentioned the whole wearables idea, and wearables is something that we've actually written a fair amount of it about over at Information Week, where I'm an editor, and it's a sister property to Interop. But traditionally, the kind of coding and putting things together and soldering and all of that is considered to be more of a guy's realm, more of a boy's realm, and yet I hear you getting very excited about this. What Do you know or have you thought about what really captured your imagination when you saw all this going on?
Certainly. I mean, I've also had a connection to fashion, you know, my whole life, because one thing I do say is, you know, once you discover the maker community, you realize you've been a maker your whole life. But my mom taught me how to sew, and we always made clothing, and I was just always so into that idea. And I don't mean it to be like the idea of wearable technology is a way to get girls into it, but if it is, you know, let's let that be a champion of it. But I'm super into, of course, being unique, because I also have a background in theater. So, you know, when I saw wearable technology and I'm like, this is going to be getting bigger. And, you know, and of course now knowing that it's, you know, in the whole health industry and, you know, people wanting to, you know, monitor their, you know, workout regimes and such. But for me, what attracted me to it was literally the blinking lights. You know, I want to wear lights. I want clothing with motors in it that changes the dress length, but, you know, just something that captures people. And then really in wearing it, what I discovered, even on that first day at the Tech Museum, is that the discussions and the conversation that other people are inspired to have with me just because of what I'm wearing, I mean, that is just so valuable to me.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the conversation, because at CES, where you and I met, I had interesting conversations with a lot of people, and one thing really stood out to me. Now, I've been covering the computer and technology field for a very long time, and I'll admit there has been a certain homogenous nature to the people I have talked to. Not to put too fine a point on it, but, you know, over the last 30 years, I would say that I've talked to many more male engineers and executives than I have female. But at CES, I noticed something really fascinating. In many of the traditional electronics areas, the computers and you know, home electronics, that pattern held. But when I got into the robotics and 3D printing and anything having to do with Arduino, all of a sudden, it seemed like there were just as many women there as men. And it wasn't the women there, as sometimes is the case at one of these trade shows, as a spokesmodel or a booth model. But this is who, you know, these were the engineers, these were the company owners, these were people who were very excited to demonstrate the technology and the products there in the booth. And was I seeing something that, in your experience, is not reflective of the whole industry, or are we really seeing a lot more women being very active in some of these newer areas of technology?
Yes, you know, I think from my experience, I always am talking to men, I find, these days. And so when I do interact with some women, I can report that, you know, a lot of people that I met at CES, or women, were PhDs. And I, you know, I looked down at their tag, I was like, wow, you're a PhD. And so that tells me that, you know, they've been in this industry for a long time. But then with the, you know, emergence of the maker movement that, again, I had no idea was even happening, and I'm from the Bay Area. Like, so as more women are getting aware of it, I think that we will start to see that manifesting eventually into more women in, you know, business owners and inventors. But, you know, there are a lot of organizations out there right now, too, that are helping women be like, okay, cool, so you want to 3D print something. But let's look at that in the whole spectrum of designing a product.
Designing a product, you know, you lead us into an interesting area. And it's one that I'd really like to explore with you, because it sort of gets to the question of, if women are involved in designing a product along with men, is it likely or is it even possible that it will be a different and better product than if you had a team made up of people who all look the same. In other words, if you have a group of engineers who are all, you know, guys who graduated from MIT, are they going to develop a different product than a team that's made up of men and women who have degrees in different things from all over the country? Or is a good product just a good product that's going to spring up out of the ether regardless of the team that forms around it?
Yes, I mean, all of that is really, you know, good to examine, because I think an initial idea of that was like, oh, if we're designing a product and we only are consulting with, you know, just even Americans, you know, then the product will be just limited in that, you know, someone from another culture, another country would be like, oh, you know, if this was sold in a store in Indonesia, you know, this is how people would use it. Or, you know, so I think that idea of like being more international is already a concept that I think a lot of companies get. And so, you know, they're bringing that in. But with women, and I mean, we don't need to necessarily go there to be like, oh, well, women are the mothers, and, you know, and women are, we buy a lot of products too. But it's just about a different mind, you know, with a different perspective, a different history, and then just like you said too, even in different disciplines. And so when I see the whole maker movement, you know, when I'm teaching kids who are in fourth grade, you know, of course I'm like, I am looking at, you know, 24 brand new electrical engineers, but it's not even really that. It's just that the act of making expands your mind and opens you up to like a new realm of confidence. And, of course, you know, enthusiasm in some direction. So that's why, you know, girls that never received that, you know, may not, you know, be attracted to a job where it's like, hey, I've got to, you know, I've got to invent this product out of the ether. And, yeah, I've got all these men to, you know, deal with. But you know, a team that is, you know, 50% men and 50% women, it's not like women's voices over men's would necessarily be heard more or less. I mean, I just think that overall, like, designers on a team need to, you know, speak up about their opinions and their input, you know, about the design.
Well, we're going to talk about speaking up and input on design and other things in just a moment. Before we do that, though, I want to remind everyone that this is Interop Radio, the voice of the Interop community. Interop, connecting the IT community, happening April 27th through May 1st, 2015, at the Mandalay Bay Convention Center in Las Vegas. For more information, go to www.interop.com. You know, we've been talking about products and that aspect of the maker community, but I know that you aren't simply making things. You're also running a company, and you're in the management team of another company. When you
yes.
got into those positions, would love to talk about whether you found yourself as a lone woman in positions like that, or again, is the maker world providing an entire environment in which you're finding that there are other women as colleagues? I'm fascinated by the question of whether we're starting to see more women get into these management and leadership roles, as well as being down in the hands-on positions in the community.
Yes, exactly, because I think it really is, you know, we're talking about, yeah, two different fields of, you know, women who are inspired, take that time and you know, and have the support all through, you know, middle school, high school, college, and beyond to, you know, be the new innovators on the scene. And then there's this other side, which, you know, is men and women on the education wing, where, you know, across the whole country, we've been, there's been an adaptation to a new style called Common Core, which is just trying to, you know, really make everything more across the board and making sure, you know, each grade level is like definitely learning certain skills. But a lot of the teachers who have been, you know, my best allies are advocating that, you know, even when we're teaching history or math, that if we implement maker tactics, that, you know, and activities and, you know, keeping those hands busy, that kids do retain the knowledge, you know, much in the same way I would advocate that, you know, music helps kids, you know, remember and you know, expands their minds too. But I think that when I came onto the scene, you know, officially, you know, I do, the date is official. It's March 16th, 2013. I have just been so busy because what I offer, apparently no one else had really been offering. And so if people are coming to, you know, Tanaya, who's, I call myself a geoanthropactress, because I have a degree in geology, theater, and anthropology. I'm like, if they're coming to me, you know, and not some electrical engineer who graduated from San Jose State or, you know, Cal, Berkeley or whatever, you know, there really must be a demand for this. And so really what I've been trying to offer is like myself as a maker for sure. And, you know, I make stuff at home doing my own thing, but that I want to make other makers. So my business with creating kits, you know, some people receive them and they're like, well, what am I going to make with this? Like, this is just a bunch of material. I'm like, exactly. You know, I'm not saying, oh, we are sewing lights onto this exact pattern and this hat and here's the exact diagram. You know, I want to leave the kids like some experimentation time. And the biggest and most fun part is failing. And I have really learned to embrace that, knowing that when I teach kids in like a 5-day course, or even just a 1-day, that there's going to be this failure time and it's going to be rough and they're just going to be confused and stumped. And then where another teacher or a parent might, you know, intervene and be like, oh, this is how you do it. Oh, you didn't try this yet, you know, or something like that. I have found a way to seed their mind with like another tiny idea, but not super giving it away, like check the black wire or something, you know, like that. But when they find their own success by making that circuit work, it's just like, I mean, you just can't buy that. You know, I mean, the joy I feel when I see that they get it and then they just run with it. And then, of course, you know, we'll encounter failures as they go, but they're not as afraid of it after a first, you know, few times.
You know, I love you talking about the permission to fail and even more than that, the encouragement to fail. In the same issue of Make Magazine that has the profile on you, that's the current issue for those listening here in January of 2015, there's a great article by Forrest Mims, sort of one of the original old school makers, talking about the importance of failing and what he learned through a product that failed. When you're talking to the kids, when you're teaching the younger people, do you find that failure is something they have trouble embracing? I mean, at a young age, have they already been taught that failure is a bad thing, or does it come more naturally, this notion of trying things with the notion of the trying is important, whether or not it succeeds?
Yeah, you know, all of this, just to start off with, is I see it both with girls and with boys. But, you know, as a kid, you know, we all had a different experience of, you know, you're at grandma's house and you break a lamp or something and then you're, you know, chided forever over it, or you're not trusted in that room or something like that. But I think in my workshops, what I've done is like when someone fails, you know, it's all about my attitude. Like I could say, like, I can't believe you short-circuited and melted this battery pack. Like, that battery pack cost $5, you know. But instead, I'm like, I celebrate it. I'm like, oh, you guys, everyone, you know, Curtis failed over here. Look how he melted the battery pack. And Curtis, like, why don't you tell everyone how you did that so that, you know, we can avoid it because, you know, it is a little dangerous. You know? So I frame it where it's totally fine. And, oh, and you'd love this one too. Like, whenever we break a DC motor, because sometimes it happens when we're making art bots, you know, again, I celebrate that. I'm like, oh, you know, Mary broke this DC motor. You know, I mean, she, you know, sometimes they just come apart. But I'm like, you know what's really cool about that? now we can take it apart and we can see what's inside. So, you know, I always spin it as like a positive and never that like they did anything bad or wrong. And same thing with electricity, which again, you know, with my grandpa, you know, living through me, I'm like, with electricity, if a child has connected it wrong, you know, I just say, oh, well, you know, it's not working. We all want the lights to turn on. It's not that like you did something wrong. It's just that this circuit isn't working. So I sort of place the failure also just on the project itself or on the materials versus like their choices, because what I want them to learn about engineering is that it's about trying, you know, tons and tons of different things and seeing what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, the importance of recording the failures just as much as the successes.
You know, I love the idea of children just diving in and trying things. It's something that I've seen in the kids that I've taught. One of the things that I'm wondering about, though, I know that you also deal with adults in your various roles.
Yes.
Do you find that it is more difficult to get the adults to give themselves permission to fail, both in making and even in trying things from a company perspective? I mean, is the fear of failure something that you sort of run up against often when you're dealing with the other grown-ups in your life?
I'm really so glad you brought this up, because recently, you know, I taught a string of workshops for kids. And then I did this one event where I was going to be offering a little workshop for some adults. And I often teach adults how to solder and sew with electronics as well, and programming. I mean, I have a thing called Maker Monday I offer in the Bay Area. But it was so funny at this event, because just like with the kids, I had my big table with a bunch of alligator clips and LEDs and battery packs for wearable electronics. And with the kids, you know, I present the materials and I'm like, all right, let's see if you can get this light to turn on. And then, you know, struggle, and they finally get it. And then I'm like, now try to do a second light. And that's always a hard challenge. But with the adults at this event, you know, everyone was just sitting, you know, kind of cross-armed. I mean, luckily they weren't on their laptops in this event, but, you know, just kind of sitting there and just asking me a ton of questions about how I teach, when I'm like, I'm trying to get you guys to be the fourth graders like that I normally teach, you know, so let me show you by you doing it. And, you know, I only got one person out of a group of about 25 adults to actually go for it and, you know, start connecting and, you know, not being afraid. And, you know, and so it was really interesting that, you know, for sure with adults, they're less likely to just do, because what they want is they want to do it right the first time. And only once.
Well, I'd love to start bringing this down. If you were going to give advice to people, and let's break it down in a couple of areas. If people were to ask you, how do I help my daughter, my niece, the girls that I know in my church, my community group, if I wanted to help them become more confident and really start embracing these notions, how do I start? What would you suggest someone do to help girls start moving along this path?
Certainly. You know, this is on my mind daily, because I can only reach so many students, and I'm trying to be able to reach more. You know, online, as we know, there are fortunately many opportunities to get kits, to get you know, like projects. I mean, there's Inventables. There's a great website called Hackster.io that breaks it down really conveniently, where it's just on the hardware that you're using. Here's a bunch of projects to try. And but you know, I think it's even easier than that. You know, when I remember being a kid, even before my grandpa and I did, you know, science fair projects with electricity or whatnot, you know, it was just the idea of making. And I think some of these original skills of like sewing, of you just taping and cutting things out of cardboard. That there's a whole craze that a lot of girls are into that's like called finger weaving, where they take these little bands, and I totally did that when I was a younger girl. So there's a lot of these like maker activities that, you know, I'm sure a lot of parents would see as like lower risk, where, you know, at most you're using a glue gun and some scissors or something like that. But once they're ready to like really get going, you know, there are these electronic stores out there where you can just get a couple wires, a battery pack, and a DC motor and you know, just kind of start experimenting. But if people are like, oh, no, I really need some guidance on that, then, you know, there are, of course, projects to mimic online. But I just think it's the idea of, you know, making, and for me, it was really in the repetition. You know, if I was going to sit down and sew one little circuit with a lily pad and then be over with it, you know, honestly, like a lot of my students do, where they did it that one time, you know, but you really get in the groove by the time you do that 10th project, you know. So there's an issue with volume and cost. I mean, I get that, you know. I mean, my kits are $20 to $35, and that's still, you know, too much for some schools and stuff. So I try to do my best, but, you know, I think that it can start smaller with essentially what we would originally think of as art projects, you know?
Well, with the art projects in kids, I think that makes a ton of sense. And it's something I can imagine a lot of people doing. Frankly, it's something I can imagine doing. The next question, though, I think might be a little more challenging, because I want to ask if you have adults, either those in the company around you, those who you are trying to lead in a new direction, or perhaps even those who are above you on the corporate ladder that you'd like to help see, you know, some of the benefits of this culture of experimentation and even failure. How do you do that with adults? I don't know. It is something like having lily pad days on Tuesdays to get everyone in and hacking around a table the way to go? Or are there other techniques you can use if you're trying to do this with adults and with companies?
Certainly. No, it's a hard question, and I luckily do have some experience in that. But I have actually taught some, you know, for the better term, a team building workshop for adults. One example was, you know, this company were just like, yeah, we don't want to run around. We don't want to go to some restaurant. We just want to like do something together. And I was like, perfect. You know, everybody bring in, because it was all men. So I was like, everyone bring in a tie that you stained or, you know, has like a flaw in it or something. And then we sewed a lily pad on and the LED components on top of those stains to cover it up. But the advantage of doing it all in the same room together is that you see what other people are doing. And, you know, maybe one student, adult or child, is, you know, faster. So they finish, but they failed because, you know, they got done sooner, but then they saw, oh, you know, I messed this part up. So then everybody else is like, oh, let me check that out. And then, you know, so you're inspired, not really in a competitive nature, but just by seeing 25 projects in the room and seeing some failures, some successes, it's so much more informative than just doing one project alone in your room. And my favorite part, you know, for adults and for kids too, is that what I lead, there's always an opportunity for the ego to show itself, where, you know, we're all going to make an art bot, but, you know, Larry is going to put, you know, a scarf on his, and, you know, Jane is going to put crazy hair on hers. And, you know, so there's this point where, you know, everybody is doing the same thing, but then they get to individualize. And with Arduino, my biggest joy for adults, again, and for kids, is that I pair them up. And I say, you know, one of you is, you know, primarily the electrical engineer and the other one is the programmer, but I want you to work together and check each other's work. And so with adults, as well as always, you know, it's great to learn these communication skills where, like, you're just talking about a little circuit board and, hey, did you plug that red wire into the right place? And, you know, so you're learning people skills, but also communicating about engineering And then, of course, I also encourage mostly in my kids' classes is to check with another partnership if you have a question and see how their circuit is going. Because, you know, usually there's only one of me in the room, so I'm running around helping everybody. But if they can check with another group. So I'm really building this dialogue in the engineering space. And, again, for women, you know, especially, it's great to have confidence in talking about what you make because it's less scary than talking about yourself.
Tanaya, I love all of these ideas, and I would love to keep talking with you. But, unfortunately, we've come up against the end of our time for today. I hope that I can invite you to be a guest on Interop Radio again in the future.
Oh, certainly, Curtis. This has been a great introduction, and, you know, we can really delve into any of these sides of things. And I support everyone out there to give it a try and to know that you can achieve it yourself.
Well, before you go, tell everyone how they can follow what you're doing, either through social media or websites. How do we keep up with all the goings-on of Tanaya Hurst?
Well, there are many opportunities, of course. I am on Facebook, Tanaya Hurst, and I'm on Twitter, at Tanaya Hurst, and I'm also at Linino Woman, as I am all about promoting wireless microcontrollers for IoT. And then finally, if you really want to be inspired, and especially to inspire the girls out there, you're welcome to check out my 2 music videos, which will soon be 4 music videos, on YouTube. I have one song called I'm So Maker and another song called Happy Making. And so check those out. Show them to your daughters, your nieces, your students, and get them inspired.
Outstanding. Well, Tanaya, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Curtis.
And thanks to everyone for listening to this episode of Interop Radio. Now, if you're listening to this on iTunes or in an on-demand edition, did you know that we are live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific? We also have a live chat that goes on during the episode. We would love to have you join us for those live episodes. I want to remind everyone that this does indeed happen every Tuesday. Now, next week, we're going to have a great CIO as our guest. Jonathan Feldman is CIO of the city of Asheville, North Carolina, and he is a tremendously innovative CIO. I've talked with him before. We're pleased to have him as our guest here on Interop Radio next week. And then in 2 weeks, on February 10th, we're going to have a wonderful person on, Betsy Weber, who is the technology evangelist for TechSmith. And as such, she does some incredible work on presentations. So we're going to be talking with her about all these presentations that you make to your company, to customers, to your partners, to everyone else, how to make them a lot less painful for your audience to have to sit through, and how to make them perhaps a little bit more compelling for getting your point across. So that's coming up the next 2 weeks here on Interop Radio. We hope that you'll join us for both of those. As a reminder, Interop Radio is brought to you by Interop, connecting the IT community. Interop Las Vegas coming to you April 27th through May 1st, 2015 at the Mandalay Bay Convention Center in Las Vegas. Please go to www.interop.com for more information. Well, for everyone here at Interop Radio, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. Hey, we'll see you next time.